Hi all, on this week's Orlando Addict podcast, news on things that used to be an iDrive. A lot of random stuff talking about Disney and Disney Springs. Also, there's no news from Denny as the poor bastard's ill. And pretty much a bit of random chat by me. Nice and short and sweet, let's get to it.
Also, there may be swearing in this episode, so this may not be for young ears.
Right, everyone. Time for a new episode of the Orlando Addict podcast. Took a week off due to football, Chelsea, and that. Wanted to get back in the Premier League, watch it all. And I'm doing a new project on green screening on YouTube for Orlando and also something called Ramp Football. So if you're interested, try out Bald Phil's YouTube page, subscribe to it, like the videos, and obviously click on that lovely little bell to get to know when I'm sending new stuff out. Anyway, so I'm doing something different today as well. I'm doing something about iDrive, and I thought to myself, most missed magic things. So, 7 memories from International Drive Orlando. Now, I found this on Inside the Magic, so it was quite interesting. Some of them I haven't done, some I have. But, you know, you just want to remember the good old days of International Drive. So let's start off with the most recent one, what's disappeared from us. The old great theme park on International Drive. Yep, that'd be Wet n Wild. As mentioned before, the granddaddy of water parks was established in 1977, before I was born. Wet n Wild kept guests cool for almost 40 years. Millay sold the Orlando location to Universal Parks and Resort in 1998. The water-based adventure would remain open until the end of 2016, I believe. Many of the attractions were moved up street to Universal's Volcano Bay, which opened a year later. The few last two times I went to, what was probably about 2016, funny enough, to Wet n Wild, I must admit you could tell from 2014 onwards it felt run down, and I got some burns on some of the slides. Coming to think about it now, I think this was more down to Universal had their plan and instead of spending shitloads of money on it, even though they put a few things in there, new things for the kids, like that sandpit thing castle, what looked brilliant by the way, theming for children. I can't remember what it's called now, but Breakaway or something. It was really good, but the rest of it was feeling really worn down. And obviously, the news was come out that we were getting a new water park, which means Wet n Wild was no more. Next one I have never heard of, Bell's Factory Outlet World. Just past Oak Ridge Road, at the end of International Drive, is a discount shop mecca known as the Orlando International Premium Outlets. Bell's Factory Outlet World opened in 1981, and the indoor shopping experience, the mall had a food court and spanned 80 acres just off Oak Ridge when it first opened. A second indoor collection of stores were added in 1984, and Ive Drive was expanded to the end of the mall. Prime Outlets acquired the mall, a nearby strip mall associated with the Bell's property in 2006, and it remodeled into an outdoor lifestyle centre in 2007. I'm not going to lie. Sounds boring to me, not missing it. I'm not a shopaholic, so yeah. And if you just hear some shaking, that's my dog shaking his ears. He likes to be on the podcast and the green screen stuff. Then we had number 3, King Henry's Feast. International Drive witnessed the arrival in 1986 of a royal feast celebrating the birthday of King Henry the 5th, 6th, 7th, I don't know. I'm never good with that V. It was a V and 2 1s, so whatever that is. I should have learned Roman numerals, really. Featuring sword fights and other medieval themed entertainment, King Henry's Feast took place twice a night within the castle of International Drive. Unlimited beer, hell, fuck yeah. And wine for the ladies, or maybe men these days. And soft drinks for the children, with chicken and ribs. His food, all which was delivered by serving wenches and you will see it along tables. Unfortunately, the festival came to a close in 1999, and the location eventually became the Olive Gardens, what I know a lot of people love now. For me personally, the best memory of the dinner attraction was enjoying the annual Klingon feast coordinated by Star Trek. That sounds brilliant. Imagine a bunch of rowdy Klingons with access to unlimited beer. Oh man, I would have loved to have seen that. Anybody's got a video, please send that to me. Next one, a lot of people know about, I never did again, Skull Kingdom. With a giant skull-shaped facade marketing the entrance to this haunted castle, a brand new haunted attraction arrived in Orlando in 1993. Skull Kingdom enjoyed a reign of horror just south of Kirkman Road on International Drive and the American Way. The two-story haunted attraction was named one of the Dark Rides and Funhouse Enthusiasts Organization's top 10 walkthrough attractions. Skull Kingdom haunted visitors until November 2006. Now for me, I think this was a bad idea getting rid of. And maybe someone like Universal should look into doing something like that themselves. This sounds pretty cool and I would have done it multiple times. I'm not sure what it was like inside. Maybe people didn't like it. But to me, that just sounds something right up my street. So I'm shame I missed that. Number 5. Malibu Grand Prix. Just behind Skull Kingdom, further down American Way, was in the Malibu Grand Prix. This Formula One style racing attraction was also home to mini golf, battling cages and castle housed arcades. All of this was sadly demolished in 2000. The valuable International Drive area land that once hosted this family fun destination is now a location of Homewood Suites Hotel. You bastards. Yeah, again, this is something else I would have loved to have done. Not everything in the theme parks, and sometimes people don't want to go to Orlando and do all the theme parks. This would have been added extras, what should have kept. The upkeep would have been brilliant, and it's a shame things like this never stayed. Number 6, FAO Schwartz Point Orlando, a corner of iDrive, brought an IMAX movie theatre, retail, restaurants, locations to the area. One of the original anchors of this two-story outdoor destination was FAO Schwartz. During its tenure, 1997 to 2004, the upscale toy cellar would prove a perfect place for persuading the latest and the greatest playthings and great way to pass the time while waiting for the movie theatre to open. Yeah, I can see why this is gone. There's too many choices of movie theaters around now. Pretty much a lot of people just want to go to movies now and just watch movies and not mess about. And you don't need to show up early. You get your times, you know, to get there 20 minutes early at the most. Number 7, Peabody Ducks Parade. I remember this. Towering above the neighbouring Orange County Convention Centre, the Peabody Hotel came to Orlando in 1986. The upscale iDrive-In expanded to add another tower in 2010, bringing a total of 1,641 rooms to the 32-storey site. Peabody Orlando was second incarnation of the Marty Belts. Yes, same belts as the Factory Outlets World hotels, and the first being in Memphis. Daily duck prey waddled their way through the hotel lobby and away from the front of the fountain. They would take place again at 5 p.m. as the Drakes departed in the fountain and the tradition ended in the Hyatt Regency took over the property in 2030. I did see this a couple of times. It was kind of cute and funny. But I live near a mill pond in England. I see this every day with ducks and that. So this is nothing special to me. But I can understand why loads of people loved it. So pretty much that's just a few of them I can think of off the top of my head. So if anybody's else interested in like history stuff in Orlando, get back to me and I'd like to do a bit more history stuff. Right, has anybody ever played that Play Disney Park app? Well, let's try and understand this thing. So in 1999, Walt Disney World validated guests and their reality of waiting long lines for attractions at the park, introducing the fast pass system for the very first time. The system's goal was lessen guest wait times and queues by allowing them to reserve times to enjoy attractions in much the same way you might make reservations for dinner. And keeping with Disney's commitment, you continually improve guest experience. The park, you know, unveiled that new way to make those wait times less frustrating. Well, we were hoping for an additional 2 or 3 fast pass selections per day, what never happens with Disney. We're thrilled that Disney unveiled the Play Disney Park app. Here's a few things you may want to know about it. So the app turns wait times into game time. The premises of the Play Disney Park app is to turn time spent in queues into quality time spent with family and friends. The app includes interactive trivia, games, music and more that can be explored and enjoyed together. This group play makes wait times and queues much more fun. Not for me. So for example, you'll need to know a few things first. So in order to use the Play Disney Park app, you first have to download it. It is available for Apple and Android smartphones and it's free to download. After you download it, open the app and it will ask you to turn on your location on your phone and then allow the app to access the information. The app only works if it has your location information, as it uses this information to launch different games in the queues. You also need to enable your Bluetooth capability on your phone, so make sure you've got a power bank or something, because you can use your battery power up on this thing. Queue games complement the attraction and only work if you're in the parks. Too bad we can't enjoy these games away from the parks, I say, but we're designed to be used in queues. Each game is inspired by the attraction for which you're in the line. In the queues for Toy Story Mania, you can play a game called Playset Party. In the queues of Peter Pan's Flight, you can play Off to Neverland. Rocket Race. Is there a game you can play in the queue for Spaceman and Slinky Dog Dash? Yeah, you can play Andy's Board Game Blast. Standing in the queue is what unlocks the games. This is why enabling location is really needed. Something about guest age 13 and up can set up a Disney account online. Once you have an account set up, you'll want to sign into your account before you start to play the games and play Disney Park app. Doing so will allow you to earn digital rewards within the app. I'm not sure what rewards are because I never give it a damn myself. They say the app's easy to use. As you know, just pretty much download the app, enable the locations, choose Disney World as your location, indicate which theme park you're enjoying at the time. Click the Mickey head in the upper left corner of the screen. Sign in your Disney account. Add players to your account. Enjoy the games. That simple. Playing this app has added bonuses as well. In addition to offering guests fun games and trivia to enjoy while you wait for experience and attraction, the app also has a great music in store for guests. Access Apple Music from inside the app, and you will have access to a playlist inspired by different theme lands in the park. You know, like Small World songs, One Little Spark, Supercalifragilisticexpialidocious, A Spoonful of Sugar, and on and on. The app will say it is promising to grow. Disney hasn't given us too many details yet on the app stuff, but they could plan to grow it and attraction lands in the park. The app promises to be valuable to guests once Star Wars Galaxy Edge opens in August 29th, 2019. The app will enhance guest adventures in the new land and make the experience more immersive and interactive. So if you're into Star Wars, this app might be good for you as well, because it's going to be busy in there. So if you're in long queues and lines, you might want something to do, and this could be a good option. So that's pretty much all I can say about this app, really. And as I say, it's Play Disney Park app. So give it a go. I think it's only at Disney World and not Disneyland, by the way. Right, it's another place I don't think people always talk about as much as they should. And it's obviously Disney Springs. So let's have a look at the top entertainment in Disney Springs in Walt Disney World. Obviously, number one, we're going to start off with Marketplace Stage. Located right in the middle of the action, the Marketplace Stage is a great option for those needing to break from their hustle and bustle of Disney Springs. Of those just wanting to check out the daily entertainment, the stage sits right on the main pathway of Marketplace, so it's hard to miss. Plus, the views behind it of Lake Bowen are gorgeous. Disney brings in entertainment such as top bands, DJs and local dance, marching bands and choir groups usually. It's just a great stop to listen, but it's also fun just to hear far off music while wandering Disney Springs. I've sat here a few times just when I needed to chill. Yeah, it's pretty nice and cool. I've never seen anyone big there yet myself personally. I've seen a lot of local people. Sometimes I actually would prefer the local people, because I think they deserve time to shine as well. Then you've got obviously the movie theater, AMC Movies at Disney Springs. Going to the movies isn't necessarily the first thing you think when going to Disney. Ah, you're on there. I go cinema at least twice, maybe three times when I'm in Orlando. But the sometimes it can be really fun. AMC Movies is a large theatre complex that always has the newest releases and added features for its theatre in incredible full screen dining opportunities, which you can catch a great movie and have a delicious meal. It's not delicious, I thought it was terrible, but each to their own. If it's a rainy day or there's a premiere on you'd like to see, flick, AMC is a great entertainment option. Number one I should do, and everyone slap me because I haven't done, House of Blues. House of Blues is such a sweet entertainment experience, no matter where in the world you're visiting. Just everything is better at Disney, well, not always, located in Disney Springs, West Side. House of Blues rocks out every evening, and some of the best bands out there. At the Music House, guests can be the evening with a great meal, check out the talent on the stage, and then dance until closing. With funky decor and chill atmosphere, House of Blues is a place to be. That's actually quite a fun place to be at night. Then we've got number four, Splitsville Luxury Lane. Splitsville is a bowling done right. This is not just your ordinary bowling alley. This is a multi-level, luxurious dining entertainment experience. Splitsville is plenty of lanes and games, but also has an entire seating area just dedicated to the full menu and bar, from sliders to nachos and pizzas, even sushi. Splitsville's got you covered. They also occasionally feature musical guests to entertain you while you play. This is such a great way to get to the most out of Disney Springs, which you'll stay around the whole family. Next one is Raglan Road Live Music. Is it bad that I haven't heard of this? Raglan Road is known for its killer fish and chips and dancing. During the meal, you're entertained with true Irish song and dance on the stage in the centre of restaurant. This awesome, but after hours, Raglan brings you... Sorry, I'm having a bit of a problem with my throat. And I'm back. Raglan Road brings a party outside every day from 8 p.m. to 12:30 a.m. The Raglan musicians and dancers come onto the patio outside the main doors and put on an energetic, engaging show. This is a great entertainment option for those who don't want to, who wants to grab a pint and nothing else. I think another one I'm going to go, I think that's pretty much all I can think of on my list. Maybe the Edison Live Entertainment could be the last one I would choose for you. This one is cool. The entertainment options like Great Gatsby comes to life, that even how Disney builds it, it's like stepping into the Jay Gatsby's famous parties. The Edison is a remarkable new restaurant for lavish decor and decadent food, but the nighttime adult entertainment puts it all over the top, featuring circus acts, swing music, 20 stars, flappers and large dance floor. The Edison knows how to have a good time. For guests, this is like stepping back in time with a full bar for something too unique and fun and ridiculously entertaining. Check out the answer. Obviously, people, this is the only ones I'm choosing for now. You really need to look in pricing yourself, because we know Disney Springs is not always the cheapest options for people to do things. Obviously, Disney Springs at night as well, there's a lot of outside entertainment as well, what's free to watch, so obviously look into that stuff as well. But that's just a few things on Disney Springs I could think off the top of my head. Anyway, we'll stick to Disney Springs. For the best bites and flavours of Florida, this is Orlando Informer's opinion. So it's really down to him. It's not my opinion, not they are. I don't really have any opinion. I'm quite easy on food. Right, so we've got number one, Prime Rib Sliders. Venue, the Polite Pig. Location is in Townsend, and the price is $8. Speaking as a born and bred Floridian, he is. There isn't anything more southern than barbecue. My home state is no exception to this, and since the Polite Pig is also a locally owned business, I suggest you start here. The prime rib sliders serving size is perfect for handful, and more than your average 2-bite offering at Epcot Food and Wine Festival. It is very delicious and smoky taste and slight kick, providing fun bite. The prime rib is topped with citrus and green paprika. Horseradish feel, get your words right, giving that the fresh brunch and taste buds what you will enjoy everything. I'm bored, boy, he says everything right. You've got also number two, the Bloody Orange Moose. What's pretty It's at the Amoretta's, located in town centre, and the price is $8. As we're moving things along, let's grab ourselves the Amoretta's pastries. This dessert is almost too pretty for me to eat. The blood orange mousse, or mouse as they like to call it sometimes, is shaped in a small, boldly coloured half-domed orange topped with a sugar stick straw and invokes adorable play and orange juice. From your first bite, it takes you on an adventure in a texture with the moist lemon cake and grapefruit gilly hidden inside the mouse. The mouse mousse. They keep on changing the word, this guy does. Make your mind up. You want to say mouse or mousse? These bring the tartness with the grand banana simple syrup balances the otherwise boring. He's boring me with it. I'm moving on. With drink time. Blood Orange Madras. This is at Chef Art Smith's Homecoming. Location, the landing price is $12. Crossing over a few bridges, we arrive at Chef Art's. At this, as my first time here, I stopped at the patio bar, some familiarity. The restaurant generally theme is Florida focused, Southern comfort. While the bar is fully serviced and specialized in moonshine, the feature of the Blood Orange Madras for the event. The Bad Boy is a mixture of blood orange moonshine, freshly muddled strawberries, pineapples, and pure and cranberry juice. Pure, I should say, by the way. It's an easy drink that's similar to flavour and Mummy's Revenge signature drink at the Universal Orlando Resort. It isn't terribly sweet, and it's great representation of both the event and the venue. The next one is Orange Gator Waffle Cone Motorworks Pulp Friction Grapefruit IPA. Bloody hell, could I make that any longer? This is at the Morimoto Asia location, the landing, and it's $15 Gator and Waffle Cones, $9 for the Pulp Fiction IPA. Pretty much any food can attest when presented with the opportunity you can pass up trying something by Iron Chef, especially if the caliber of the Mushroom Maruta. Yeah, I couldn't say the words, so I sort of mumbled it. Trust me, dear readers. He doesn't disappoint. The Orange Gator and Waffle Cone serves fun and visiting the beachside boardwalk and perfect grab go format. Maintaining the Florida flair by switching the poultry of orange chicken with savoury gator and cradling it lovingly with a sweet crunchy waffle cone. Those reading this a bit more deeply may know in the southern comfort a fusion chicken waffle presents within itself. God, he does waffle on this bloke, literally. I should point out the Gator Waffle Cone is dual serving, making this a perfect for two people to enjoy. And personally, I would pair it with the Motorworks Pulp Fiction Grapefruit IPO. That's his choice. I'm not going for any more of that. He's kind of bored me. Sorry, guys, if I've waffled on a bit of this guy here. I thought it'd be better. I thought he was going pretty much going about places to eat, and you know, but he just pretty just went about a few little appetizers. So, yeah, just a few little ideas from him there. But, yeah, nothing special, personally. And probably not worth the money, in my opinion. You probably can go places in Florida that would be cheaper and get bigger portions and be just as good. So, I'm sorry if I've upset anybody by thinking that, but sometimes I think just trying to give it fancy words and that doesn't impress me. So, yeah, a bit of old news from Disney World back in July, but I forgot to keep on bringing this up. Disney World guest punches cast member in the face after not having a fast pass to Tower of Terror. Now, before I actually read this, I want to say no one has the right to hit anybody. It doesn't matter what you want, you spoiled, entitled little brats. We all want everything. We can't always get everything. You just have to be calm. It's bloody hot. The cast members have to be out in that heat all the time. Bloody give them some slack, you bloody idiots. So here's the story. A Walt Disney World guest visiting from Chicago was angry she didn't have a fast pass to Tower of Terror, and she ended up punching a Disney World cast member in the face and pushing buttons that could have affected the ride. Dickhead. The attack took place on the night of July the 13th when the 23-year-old Chicago woman, entitled little bitch, be better word, and a group of guests were upset that their fast passes weren't valid for the Tower of Terror attraction of Disney Hollywood Studios. The group was in the area of the attraction where the guests are ushered into the library theme pre-show. So this was where the 23-year-old cast member offered to help the woman and her friends with their fast passes, but the group only became angrier. This was when the cast member called for a supervisor to request security. However, this made the Chicago tourist even angrier, leading her to pushing the buttons on the cast member's ride podium. This is when the employee asked the Chicago woman to stop, but when she was ignored, she tried to push the tourist's hands away from the buttons, according to the sheriff's report. And this is when the cast member was punched in the face. What dick does something like that? Risking people's rights, and what has happened because something's gone wrong for them. The cast member's trying to help them. What a fucking dick. After punching the cast member in the face, the incident only continued. Reportedly, this was when the family continued to yell profanities and record her with their phones, as they stated in the report. Yeah, they're brilliant, aren't they? So you punch someone in the face, you swear at them because it's not their fault because something's gone wrong with the fast pass or you've missed your time slot, and then you record the cast member. What the heck? After the cast member was finally able to speak with security, the Chicago women and a group left the terror. However, they were located shortly after by security. According to Orange County Sheriff Office report, the Disney worker didn't want to press charges. Well done to the Disney person. They're so calm and good. They have to put up with shit like this. But I think you should have pressed charges on the dickheads. These sort of people will do this again and again. Wherever they are, I need to learn. The 23-year-old Chicago woman wasn't charged. Disney has issued a lifetime ban to the woman. I don't think her family as well, personally. If they all shouting out as doing profanities, it's disgusting. I think it'd be a Disney World ban. It should be a whole worldwide Disney ban, I think. Disney said, "We don't tolerate unsafe behaviour," as Disney spokeswoman said when she reached for comments. The cast member who took the punch to the face has declined treatment when the sheriff's office responded to the call, even though her eye was swelling after the incident. I'm going to keep on saying this, whoever it is, if you ever listen to this podcast, you're a disgusting cretin, and personally, you should have been charged, and you should be doing time in prison for it as well. Disgusting. This is a family event. Yes, we know people get stressed in these parks. I've been stressed, and I'm with family. I've never, ever would swear at a cast member. I'd never even think of touching ride things, risking people's lives on these rides. You don't know what them buttons are doing. Poor little kids are seeing disgusting behaviour by you, entitled brat behaviour that you've been grown up, obviously bought into. And punching a cast member last week, you deserve time in prison. I'm glad you've got a lifetime ban, and I hope they make it every Disney park around the world. You're disgusting to me, and I've got no time for people like you. Yes, the heat does play in a lot of it, but we've all been in that heat, and we know how to handle it better. Chill out and let the cast member try and help you next time, you complete cockwomble. Let's keep this Disney theme going, and we'll try and talk about nicer things now after me getting very angry. I'm sure a lot of people would feel the same as me, though. But let's try something else. I'm sorry if you can hear anything in the background. I'm watching Big Brother USA, very different to the UK one. I might explain it on one podcast one day why it's so different. Right, so anyway, let's go to 9 time saving Walt Disney World hacks to help you pack in the most fun. With ticket prices forever on the rise and the crowd levels right there with them, it's never been more accurate to save that at Walt Disney World. Time is money. Fortunately, there are plenty of tips and tricks to help you save as much as your valuable time as possible from the fun stuff. Here on top of 9 time saving hacks on Walt Disney World. By the way, this is from Attraction Tickets Direct UK. Obviously, you can get your 14-day tickets, 7-day and 21-ticket tickets. You can get all theme park tickets from them. They send you real tickets. You can put a deposit down on them as well and, you know, pay it off bit by bit. So if you're from the UK looking to Attraction Tickets Direct, there are other ones like Florida Tickets as well. 1. Master the Fast Pass Plus. If you're not using Fast Pass Plus at its fullest potential, you're missing the biggest time-saving trick in the book. Download My Disney Experience app and book your advanced Fast Passes at 60-day mark before your trip. 30 days it is if you're staying off-site. Make sure you go to the most highly converted attractions first: Flight of Passage, Slinky Dog, and Seven Dwarfs Mine Train. Pro tip, apparently, the further into your trip the better chances to snag a fast pass for these three attractions. Try and book three daily advance fast passes so close together and as possible, and late morning start. This will leave you time to arrive for rope drop and take advantage of the short early morning standby queues. Use this time and try to make it priority. Number two, make the most of your meal quick service. Aside from saving a ton of money off the cost of your vacation, eating most of your meals at quick service locations will save you a boatload of time. On average, a table service meal at Walt Disney World takes up to 90 minutes, generally less for buffets. Don't get me wrong, they should take that long. You're spending a pretty penny on these meals, so the last thing you want to do is rush. But if the time and the essence of trying to pack everything in attraction-wise, quick service is probably the best way. Plan your meals at quick service locations. Mobile orders everywhere you can, where you can. We'll go to number three about mobile ordering now. A growing number of quick service locations are offering mobile ordering options. Order and pay your meal via your My Disney Experience app and bypass the line completely. Place your order, then head straight to the pickup window and grab your food and go. And you don't think mobile ordering is limited to your meals? You can now even mobile order your Dole Whips. So you can really get, there's got no excuse to waste time in the line. Obviously, one of the most obvious ones, number four, stay on property. This sounds like a cliche, but it's true. Nothing puts you closer to the magic than staying on Walt Disney property. Depending on which park you're hitting up, there are a few deluxe resorts that can have you have to serve through the park gates before you even be at your car, bus stop, and all that stuff. Heading to the Magic Kingdom Disney Complimentary Resort and Bay Lake Tower is not only a few minutes away by foot, but also has their own security checkpoint. So you can skip the epic bottleneck, the Magic Kingdom security. Disney Action Beach Club is a hop, skip, and a jump from the Epcot, and is not much further than Disney Hollywood Studios, boardwalks, and all that stuff. Also, resort hop number five. So how do you capitalize on a resort proximity to one park to the other? We're not advocating switching resort every time you go a new park agenda, but splitting the stay between monorail resorts and Epcot resorts and allocating your park plans accordingly. This could save you tons of time by keeping you off the buses. So number six is taking the minivans. When you hit it just right, Walt Disney World free transportation are awesome. But miss a bus and you try to travel between two points not connected by Disney transport, and it take for bloody ages, I agree with that. Enter minivans, official Walt Disney World lifts, operated by super knowledgeable cast members. These vehicles are here to whisk you across property in flash and two car, with two car seats for kids and sweet rock dot paint job all over it. Order a minivan from your phone via the Lyft app. From anywhere on property, the cost is mileage based, so be mindful of what you might be headed. But if you're trying to get to one resort to another for dinner, you've missed a bus, this is definitely the place to throw your money into it, I suppose. Number seven, with Star Wars Galaxy Edge, this one's going to be useful. So this one, take advantage of the extra magic hours. Staying on property, Disney doesn't cut down on transportation time. It can give you a longer day at the parks. Guests staying at Walt Disney Resort hotels can extend their days by heading to the parks during extra man hours, which are select mornings or evenings, when particular parks in the open earlier or later than official parks opening times. Yeah, for guests. So from September the 1st and November the 2nd, Disney is upping its ante and offering extra magic hours. Every day, Magic Kingdom, Disney's Animal Kingdom, and Disney Hollywood Studios, no doubt to combat the increased crowds generated by the opening of Star Wars Galaxy Edge. On-site guests will be able to enter the Magic Kingdom and Disney Animal Kingdom at 7 a.m. and Disney Hollywood Studios at 6 a.m. And I will be doing a 6 a.m. getting in there, because I'm staying at Art of Animation for a couple of nights. A whopping 3 hours earlier than park's official 9 a.m. open, so it's definitely worth it. Getting Memory Maker. Now, as I said, if you get the tickets from England, normally the Memory Maker comes with it for free. What can be quite hefty in price out there, over $100, I believe. It's your whole stay, so it's bloody great to use. We've all been there, blazing down Main Street, USA at Cinderella's midnight, trying to take advantage of those shorter early morning queues. But the castle is looking great, and you'd love to stop family photo. By the time you got your phone out and set the camera, find someone to take the picture, get your phone back, and see how it's turned out, it's the Seven Dwarfs Mine Train wait time has just went up 30 minutes. Well, a pro tip, skip the drama, but get the photo. Just spring for Memory Maker. PhotoPass photographers are stationed throughout the parks and just waiting to take high quality professional photos of you and your family. A couple of snaps, a camera, a quick scan, and the magic band. A PhotoPass card, and you're on your way. Obviously, if the photographer was a long line, it will slow down, and just keep your eyes peeled and jump anytime. There's usually another one down the road. Shops after the park closes. Ooh, number nine. What's this about? Another way to squeeze every precious minute out of the park's day is to save your souvenir shopping until literally you can't do anything else. Attraction queues may close and the park's official closing time, but so many shops won't. Hit up the big stores on your way and find time more. Really mucked that up. Hit up the stores on your way out, and not only will you save time for the fun stuff before the park closes, but you also have time to carry purchases around all day. So that's just pretty much the tips from Attraction Tickets magazine. Yeah, again, if anybody has their own tips and that what you could pull off, do it. Pass them on to me. You can do it on the Orlando Addict podcast Facebook page, or drop me an email on ballphil@gmail.com, or even send me a voice message on here on the Anchor app. So I hope you enjoy a few of these tips. I've been heavily Disney today, I think. Usually I am Universal more, but I thought today I would do a bit more about Disney.
It's round chat time.
So as it's time for random chat, and there's not really much to talk about. I haven't been to cinema much. There's not really much come out that's interested me. But football-wise, if you don't know, I'm a Chelsea fan. Was looking forward to the start of the season. So we're playing Man United at Old Trafford. We're playing well. We're hitting the post. We're hitting the crossbar. De Gea's making beautiful saves. We're dominating the ball. Somehow we lose a fucking 4-0 with the worst defending I've ever seen. If this defence was your solicitor lawyer in court, you might as well get ready to go to prison, because we were truly fucked. So we moved on. A few days later, I'm thinking, oh God, we've got Liverpool in the Super Cup final. What's this, 3-4-5-0? Nah, I should have believed in Chelsea, sort of. We played well, 1-0 up at half-time. We're dominating Liverpool, we're the better team. Kante's running midfield. He does make a difference to the side, I have to admit that. And I did try and tell loads of people about it, nah, no one wanted to know. Second half, Liverpool bought Firmino on. Yeah, they started taking Chelsea apart. Great first goal. You know, they went, you know, 1-1, and we go to extra time. Liverpool take the lead. I think that's it in extra time. Liverpool got the lead. We're finished. It's over. Nope. Chelsea get a penalty. No real decision change. You can't really tell if the keeper stopped the player and made him fall over. So the penalty's given Chelsea score. Right. Now, this is the thing we're getting to. Penalty shootouts. Both teams have scored their first four penalties. Chelsea's keeper has got a hand to two of them. He just can't keep them out. Really fucking annoying. But upsets Tammy Abraham, youngster for Chelsea, bright future, I think. Takes his penalty. Adrian saves it with his foot. That's all fine and dandy, you know, it happens. Anyone can miss a penalty. But this is what I'm getting at. This fucking VAR thing. It decides to be used when they want to use it. Now, the rule statement on penalties this season is, if you take a penalty, the goalkeeper's foot has to be on the line with contact the ball from the striker. Fair enough? Yeah, well, they've got the camera angles to prove that Adrian wasn't on his line and he's fallen with both his feet. Therefore, should be taken again. But surprise, here we go again. UEFA and FIFA decide when to use things and not use it properly. And this is why I can't fucking stand VAR. Apart from I can't stand the rule of offside. If you've got a fingertip offside, you're offside. Go fuck off with that idea. Make it a more clear and present offside decision. and this new one that's been coming up, if a player who's in the attacking position accidentally handles the ball, and we can brush their hand or anything and go past them, and then someone else scores or they score for their team, the goal's disallowed. Example, Manchester City this weekend against Tottenham, wanky bottlers Hotspurs. Ball comes in, it brushes a hand, goes to Jesus, slots in that absolute peach of a goal in the 92nd minute, I believe, what would have won the game for Man City 3-2. Nope, he's accidentally brushed a hand, no one even knew about it properly, it's brushed a hand, goal's disallowed, robbery. Now, why don't I like this rule? Because, yep, VAR's got it right there by the rule. It's the rule I can't stand. Because apparently, the other way around, if a defender accidentally does it, a penalty's not given. So you either do it this way, FIFA and UEFA, you thick tits. You either say accidental handball is a penalty and a goal disallowed if an attacker touches it. Or if a defender touches it, it's a penalty. Or you do your stupid rule you've got now when, you know, if it's, you know, you interpret what we say, we'll change it. Interpret the rule, saying, right, it's accidental, it shouldn't make a difference. Right? And then no penalty, the goal can be given. Don't do it before the defender can handball it, accidentally get away with it, but the striker can handball it and get penalised. You're spoiling the beautiful game. You're making it too American with all these over-the-top rules. This game is the biggest game on the fucking planet right now. And it has been for donkey years, longer than I've been alive. And the reason it's been the best is because the simple way the rules were done. Stop over-evaluating rules with tech. Can VAR be used? Yes, my opinion. A lot of people say, nah, don't do what Phil thinks. This is my idea. Both teams have four appeals. Both sets of managers. Now you can have two the first half, two the second half, and then you get one extra in extra time. So that would be five altogether if you have extra time. Now they can appeal a decision if they want, and if they're on top, they're right, you know, well done. Now a lot of people say, oh, people could use this for time wasting. You're correct. But imagine if you use all four of your appeals, 93rd minute, you're one all you like. This will keep you in the Premier League, or this will win you the league, for example, get top four, anything like that. And then, boom, the other team gets a penalty. They score from that penalty. Replays show it shouldn't have been a penalty. But you haven't got an appeal. So you've wasted your appeals on time wasted and it's backfired. So, you know, that doesn't work for me. So, as you can see, I'm ranting a lot about football this week. And that's pretty much it. I'm a few weeks away from going to Orlando, though. So that's some good news. 3 weeks in sunny Orlando is what I need. I'm sick of work. I just want to get away. Also, a bit of random news for you. I've started a new YouTube page. It's just under as Bald Phil. So look for there. I've got two things that I do. The Orlando Attic, what I basically do, green screen stuff now for Orlando, obviously. I've got a video coming up very soon this week. So keep an eye out for it. It's about Halloween Horror Nights. It's a list I have. And, you know, 1 to 10 and 1 to 5. So 1 to 10 being the houses, 1 to 5 being the scare zones. 1 being my favourite, 10 or 5 being my least favourites. So see what you think of them. Plus Simon from Simon Isbell, from the Simon Says Pod. He's also got his list on there. Also, I've got a new thing I'm doing on there as well. It's called Rant Football. I started off this week with football predictions and scores in the Premier League. Just the Premier League I'm doing for now. And my guest this week for doing their football score predictions for the Premier League again was Simon Isbell from the Simon Said Pod. And pretty much one more person who was in there. Sorry there, my phone started to ring just as I was recording that bit. The other guest was Colin French, and he has his own podcast, the Half and Half Scarf Podcast. Football banter between loads of mates who know each other, support teams like Fulham, West Ham, Chelsea, etc. All going at each other, giving it large, they have proper interviews, and that's a great podcast. So I recommend you try it out, everyone, if you love football. They're going to more football than I do. Obviously, I'll talk more on my YouTube page. Don't forget that. Cheap plug again, Bald Phil YouTube. Like, subscribe, comment on my videos, get in there and share them, peeps. Pretty much, that's the random chat for today. Well, that's it for this week's Orlando Addict podcast. One more to come out before I go on holiday, a week before I go. I'll talk stuff Halloween Horror Nights with all the announcements what are now officially out for the houses and all the scare zones. Go through them all, explain them all to everybody. Pretty much that. And then I'm gonna go for a little hiatus. I might have a mini sold out for the first weekend I'm away, so that will be like the Friday before I go, the Saturday I'm leaving, and then I'm just going to be recording when I'm out there, and then I'm going to be releasing them when I'm back by every 2 weeks. So, as I say, I might do it the first weekend I'm there on the Saturday. I will do all the recording while I'm on the plane or anything like that. Land Sunday morning, release it, then 2 weeks, nothing. The third week, I'm out there, a video of all the stuff I've been doing for like the first week. Then on and on for the next two episodes will be just basically holiday stuff. So I hope you look forward to all of that. Hopefully Denny will be back with Florida News, and hopefully I'll meet a few After Dark Podcast Network people as well while I'm out there. And anybody who listens to the podcast, if you'd like to come meet me, just give us a shout and I'll be there to see you. Bullfill out. Hi all, this is my up-to-date list of what you can follow me on social media. So on Instagram, you've got Orlando Addict. On Twitter, follow me at Addict Orlando. YouTube, it's Bald Phil. Facebook page, Orlando Addict Podcast. And if you'd like to email me anything, it's baldphil@gmail.com. That's baldphill@gmail.com.
Son of a whore!
This podcast is part of the After Dark Podcast Network.